This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Are your clothes safe? Alina Bartel, owner of the Natural Clothing Company, advises us on fabrics, chemicals, and organic clothes. Dr. Joe Alton, MD, about learning emergency medicine when help doesn't come. Woody Tash helps develop local food with slow money. It's Radio EcoShock. Hi there, I'm Alex Smith. We're back with more local solutions for global problems from the Mother Earth News Fair. This time I've picked three of the most intriguing interviews. Each seemed at first like a small problem, and then each guest, all feature speakers at the fair, takes us much deeper into the industrial and financial mess and out again with practical things we can do.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with a bit of an embarrassing question for you. Are the clothes you're wearing right now safe? And what about that cheap stuff you got for the kids at the big box store? It's the kind of thing we almost don't want to talk about, but these are products from a super industrial society that we put right next to our skin for hours at a time. Here to talk to us about that is Alina Bartel. She's the owner of the Natural Clothing Company. They retail eco-friendly and organic clothing, and they're based in Snohomish County in Washington. Is
that
correct?
That's right.
USA? Good. Well, welcome to Radio EcoShock, Alina.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a bit of a tough question. I mean, in a way, some people don't want to hear about this. They're, you know, it's a little close to home to think that maybe the clothes you're wearing are not safe for you. Can you talk to us about that?
Oh, absolutely. It is a difficult question because our environment, period, is not that safe. So when people point out, oh, you should be worried about this, should be worried about that, you know, it becomes overwhelming. I don't tell people to change their whole wardrobe. But if we all become more and more aware that maybe there are better choices when you shop for the next clothing item, just give it a chance. Take a look at the organic, compare, you know, and then slowly, gradually, maybe we can be making more and more difference. You know, that's how I look at that.
Well, for some people, the idea that there can be organic clothes is a new idea. I mean, what is organic clothing?
That's a very good question. The standards for organic textiles basically are addressed towards mostly organic crops. And it's basically the same thing as you eat, you know, organic corn vs. conventional, probably GMO modified corn. So the biggest crop that the textile comes from, it's cotton. And many people don't realize that cotton is actually chemically sprayed way more than any other crop that goes towards human consumption, probably because of that, because it doesn't go directly to human consumption. So the statistics show it's about 2.5 or 3% as far as acreage coverage, cotton of all the crops, but it's sprayed 24 to 25% of world chemicals, especially insecticides, goes for cotton. So if you do the math, it's about 10 times than you would logically think the regular proportions are. So it's sprayed very heavily. Cotton is very sensitive to insects, but the insecticides and pesticides work on insects just kind of like a Agent Orange. They paralyze insects' nerve system and the bug falls off and dies. Now, there are studies that show these chemicals actually bind with plant, but even if they don't, they go in our soil, you know, they get washed with the water, they go in the air, they go in the lungs of people that work with that. Eventually, they go, you know, with the water, they go in.
I've read about cotton fields in Russia, where so much insecticides were used that now the land is pretty well sterile, that you can't, it's poison.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think that's happening in many places of the world. Absolutely. And we don't ask those questions when we buy the clothes.
No, we don't ask that question. It's waking up more and more, but we don't ask too many questions. I'm originally from Poland, and it's kind of funny. I grew up in a communist system. And by the time you were going to school and become a teenager, you started asking more and more questions, and you realized that pretty much everything what is being told to you was a lie. Because all the media, radio and TV, was owned by the government, so you knew the guy comes and says something, and you looked at him and you knew it's pretty much a lie. I'm finding myself living in the United States now for 30 years, and I see a lot of media putting out information and recognizing it's a lie, but a lot of other people don't. You know, it's almost funny. So it's good to look into that, you know. It's just good to look into that. We are poisoning our environment. And when you think of agriculture, it almost in the background of your mind, you think of this plane flying by and spraying all this stuff. Where does it go? You know, it goes in the plants, in the soil, in the air, in the water. It doesn't disappear. It doesn't disappear. It goes, yeah. When it goes in the soil, it sterilizes everything.
Now, what about garment workers? Because we've just seen a terrible disaster in Bangladesh where a building collapsed, many garment workers were killed. But I have to wonder about the health of garment workers if they're handling toxic cotton products, if it's still laced with these pesticides and herbicides when they get it.
Absolutely. Most of the, at least two-thirds of the chemicals in insecticides and pesticides are carcinogenic, and the incidence of diseases between cotton workers is much higher than the regular population. It absolutely is. There is a study in Iowa that the children that were exposed to the pesticides versus control population was, or their age group was like twice as high with different diseases. There's all these things, you know, that we wonder why there's more autism, why there's more that. It's very actually hard to put the exact link. This particular toxins caused this. So government doesn't have proof. But we know that we are poisoning our environment. And one way or another, we are weakening the immune system. I came to the interest in organic clothing because my 11-year-old got suddenly very, very ill. And we went through years of climbing all kinds of different medications, working with 20 different doctors, trying to figure out what the heck, where does it come from? How are we going to cure it? Many other kids responded to medications, but he didn't. So day and night, me and my husband, we were doing research of what else can we do? What else can we do, you know? Holistic medicine, conventional medicine, and everything else, and my understanding out of that. Now, that's my own experience. I'm not claiming anything that works or doesn't work. It worked for me. We left town, we got our 5 acres, we got our chicken and goats, and I grew my own food, so I would know what I'm feeding my kid. And he's graduating from high school now, and he's doing fine. He still has health issues, but he can function, he's doing well, he's healthy, you know, within the limits of that.
You're not the first mother to tell me this story. You know, I've talked to another natural food specialist who started out because she had 2 sick kids and just had to work out all the different possibilities. She also moved to the country. She also started totally working out through the diet and making sure. And her kids are better, not totally better, but doing better. So I think we're hearing this story fairly often. Getting back to the clothing part, the other thing I've always wondered about, Alina Bartel, is sometimes you get these clothes, boy, they never need to be ironed. They seem to dry in 2 seconds. There's some sort of special treatment that those clothes are getting at the clothing plant. Is there, or am I just being paranoid about?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. My business originally started online. Now I have the actual physical store, but 30 to 40% of my clients from online are people that cannot wear anything else. They have literally sometimes few shirts only because they have to be organic. They have to be non-dyed. Their system doesn't tolerate anything else. And what happens is when the fiber goes through manufacturing process, you know, there is sizing put into the fiber so it's strong enough to go through the machines. And then originally it was starch. And with time, as our chemistry improves, there is more and more chemicals added to that. It allows to take a lower grade fiber, like cotton, for example, which comes in many different grades, and make it behave and look and feel like a higher grade. And then when the textile is, you know, it's a many-step process. When the textile is actually finished, the same process occurs. When they spray it with different solutions, you know, of many different components, it will look nicer and smoother. And you probably observe sometimes you buy something and it looks so beautiful and smooth. And then after the wash, it's just not the same garment. There is a difference. Something was put on top of that. And in my personal opinion, that's probably more toxic than the actual dyes. Dyes are a problem too, but that's actually the biggest problem, the finishing that comes on most of the conventional clothing. And people know now not to just put it on your skin to wash it, you know, but how much of that actually will get to your system and how much not.
Has anybody taken a piece of clothing and just taken it to the lab and looked at it and said, yes, we find these pesticides, or yes, we find these chemicals in it? Has this science been done, do you know?
There are tests, but now as you think of who is interested in that and who is interested in not allowing and undermining studies like that, you know, the difference of money basically that goes in both sides, it isn't the exact science. Just like you cannot really take an apple, an organic apple, and go through the test, and unless you know the history how that apple was grown, you know, you cannot really test that this apple is organic or not organic, or it isn't easy, at least for, to my knowledge. It's similar with the textile. You have to monitor the history of it, how it was produced, and how, and know. Basically, the advantage is that you know what is not on that product. Everything that I sell does not have chemicals on it. You were talking about wrinkle resistant, talking about babies wearing things that are flame-proof and, you know, retardant. It's insane. There is formaldehyde in it. There is poisons put on a baby's clothing. And children, like I said, why I started this business, their weight is so much smaller than ours. So basically what our body, we might get a rash, we might tolerate it somehow, not greatly. For the baby, it's like they would get 20 times the amount of that because of the body weight difference. And their skin is much thinner than ours. So it's more permeable. And of course, skin is our largest organ. It actually absorbs everything without going through intestines. If you just use logic without even, you know, science telling this or that, it doesn't make sense. Humanity was wearing some kind of covering for tens of thousands, probably millions of years. You know, the oldest clothes is like 34,000 years ago. So we were wearing this for 34,000 years at least. And we are wearing that chemicals on our clothing for the last 60 years. It doesn't make sense.
You're really making me concerned when you talk about the babies. I understand what you're saying about body weight and sensitivity. That sounds so important. And you mentioned flame retardants. I believe it's the law that you have to spray that stuff on baby clothes, isn't it?
Right. When I sell clothes that, which I get requests all the time for, you know, for sleeping, they are not called pajamas, they are called long johns or something else. Because if they were pajamas, they would have to come under these different specifications, and I don't even want to look into it.
Isn't it wild? Because I know people who would not have flame retardants on their couch if they knew about it, or in their carpets, but don't ask about their baby clothes.
Right. I think that's really difficult question. You know, I have a store and I deal with customers every day, and there is a lot of people coming, buying gifts, buying, you know, buying things for kids. And I think the problem is we can only handle so much danger coming to us. If I tell them too much, their eyes will glaze over and they go, it's too much. I cannot worry about absolutely everything. So I just give them a little bit information to consider. And I read somewhere, and I think it's true, that the actual change, like changing clothing, it's a big subject. It's a huge industry. It's billions of dollars and millions of people working in it. It will take a generation to change. So I invite people to just look at that a little bit in whatever step it's comfortable for them. If it's moving to natural fibers instead of nylon and polyester, that's already a step in a good direction. And that's something people can confront. They can say, yeah, you know, maybe I can do. And then instead of using regular cotton, maybe looking next item, how much would it be to buy organic? It's a tiny industry. It's a very small organic section. It's like less than 1% of all the cotton garments. But if we start looking at these little steps, you know, it will be growing.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that there's a part of the clothing industry that's moving towards wood products. And it's even coming from some of the ancient boreal forest growth in northern Canada. It's rayon.
Right.
And it's made from wood pulp. And these big forests are being cut down for people to wear. Have you looked into rayon at all? Do you have any opinion about it?
I do have opinions on everything. If we want to be closed, period. I mean, if we want to wear clothes, and Mark Twain said the person that doesn't wear clothes doesn't get much respect in our society.
They get arrested, actually.
You know, you start to have to be making some compromise, you know? You, even if you wear just leather and wool, you have to start making compromise. It has to be manufactured. There's no way of clothing us and living in a society and being absolutely, like, innocent. A lot of people ask me, so what is the best fiber? What is the best solution? You know, each of us has to make personal choices. I think natural fibers, the word textile actually comes from the word weave in Latin. The woven fibers are out of, you know, like cotton, like hemp, like wool. They preserve the most the actual fiber. The rayon, the problem with rayon is it is chemically changed. It's basically fused in a way together. It's not a weave that makes it. The material is, you know, via some chemicals, it is altered. But it's still, in some way, I would prefer personally, maybe made it out of wood, but sustainable wood, you know, just like we still use paper, but it can come from recycled sources or sustainably harvested wood. Then, like nylon and polyester, comes straight from crude oil, which cannot be renewed easily, cannot be helped by us. And obviously, you know, there's lots of problem with getting more and more oil. I used to think it comes from byproducts of oil industry. No, it comes straight from crude. So we go and we drill in places where we shouldn't be. We spill. We go to wars, you know, to get oil, to wear nylon and polyester or other things. So even to answer your question, even with rayon, there is a bit difference where it comes from. What is the original?
Yes, the legal term is chain of custody, and I think that's what we need to look out for as consumers, as you say, is where did it come from? A lot of people don't know about nylon production, that it also releases a lot of global warming gases.
Oh, absolutely.
It can change the climate. If we all wore a lot of nylon, it's not good for us in that sense, too. Well, as we wrap up, what are the resources for people who are concerned about their clothing? Where can they look, what can they do?
You know, they can ask for organic clothing. It's interesting. Just coming, I'll be speaking at the fair today at the end of the day also. Just kind of looking through data. I'm also writing a book about organic clothing because there isn't much information about it. And when I realized that, I decided to put it out. When the organic clothing, the term became popular maybe 10 years ago, maybe earlier than that, but it became more popular. And when I looked at the graph, like on the internet, how many searches for organic clothing, like the peak time was maybe around 2007, 2008. So if we would assign number 100, like Google does for it, for that number in 2008. Right now, it's about 2025. If everybody just digests that one fact, so there's one quarter of the interest that was a few years ago in organic clothing. That's where we have to turn it around. There is fewer companies. There is fewer manufacturers. There is a lot of PR about how H&M, which is a big chain, or some big designers are going in organic clothing. They are doing it just for the money. They are doing it just for the glory of saying this is organic or this is hemp. They are, you know, designer items. It's not anything that our homesteaders will wear. The actual demand for organic clothing has been shrinking. So we have to turn it around. We have to ask where people can go to the store and say, what do you have in organic cotton?
Yes. Well, I wonder if the timing of that was partly due to the economic downturn that...
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the biggest, I'm sure, factor. And I totally understand. We watch our wallet very, very closely. I absolutely understand. But, you know, I sell my T-shirts for $24 and $26. Yes, you can buy a cheaper T-shirt. But no, if you need a good T-shirt, it's not the amount that will break you. It's just a question of interest and understanding and going like, okay, my next garment, if I need to buy it, if I don't need to buy it, don't buy it or buy it from the thrift store. But if I want to buy a new item, I will look for organic.
Well, people have a lot of clothing, and some people, frankly, have way too much clothing.
Yeah,
you know, they're getting storage lockers to put all the stuff they bought. So I think perhaps we should be looking at having less clothing so we have less impact on the world. But the stuff we have is really good and really safe and didn't hurt the world to get it. If we have that process, then we'll come out on top.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I do have a very active website, and on a front page on the bottom it says, I really don't think you need much more, but if you do, buy organic.
What is your website, please?
It's naturalclothingcompany.com.
Naturalclothingcompany.com. Alina Bartel, it's been a pleasure talking with you on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Alex Smith. We're at the Mother Earth News Fair with yet another really interesting interview coming up, I think, with Dr. Joe Alton. Dr. Joe has some ideas about how we could all be prepared to look after each other if we run into an emergency. If you think that's far-fetched, I don't think so. Just think about Katrina. There was no medical help for 3 days. Whatever was there was what was there, so maybe it's best we all learn more about how to look after our bodies. So Dr. Joe Alton, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Alex.
So you do your own radio program, you do books under the label of Doom and Bloom. Why do you call it that?
Well, originally, it's funny, we started because we're master gardeners for the state of Florida, and we were originally going to do a gardening site. And so it was going to be survival and medicinal gardening. And then we found out that so many people were interested in getting medical education and finding out what they could do in the event of a disaster, let's say, or if they lived in a remote setting where help was not immediately on the way. They really wanted some of this medical information. And for us, it was sort of having to think out of the box because there's a sort of secrecy in the medical establishment. They really don't want a lot of the regular people to know about the things that we do, how to, let's say, suture a wound, when you should close a wound, when you should leave a wound open, things like that. And we found that the demand for that kind of knowledge was so great that we decided to go out on a limb and try to make people better medical assets than they are now. We don't hand them medical diplomas, and we don't tell them to, if they need a brain transplant, and there's a hospital with a brain surgeon nearby, we want them to not try to do it themselves. You know? But we do want them to be better resources for their family in times of trouble or in remote settings than they are now.
And you don't just call yourself a doctor. You're a real doctor. Would you tell us about your qualifications?
I'm a medical doctor, MD, and I'm a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American College of OBGYN. When I was young, I delivered a lot of babies, and as you get older, you sort of morph into a pelvic surgeon. so to speak. So everything below the belly button, I can take you apart and put you back together.
And you work with your wife, Amy. Tell us about Amy.
My lovely wife, Amy, is an advanced registered nurse practitioner, and she was a certified nurse midwife as well. So she also delivered a lot of babies and worked in local university hospitals and taught at local nursing schools.
Now, what sets you apart from some doctors is that you apparently believe that we could run into a serious breakdown in society, and you're not alone in that. A lot of my listeners also believe that. So tell us about that.
Well, you know that there are many different disasters that could befall us. Just this week, we saw a tragedy of people dying in tornadoes. Two women died in floods in San Antonio, Texas. I mean, there's always the chance of natural disasters that could befall us in this area of Washington. I believe you're on some earthquake faults, and there's a risk of flooding sometimes. So I think that it's really important to understand that even if a particular disaster has a very, very small chance of occurring, that there are so many different types of things that can happen, both natural and man-made types of disasters, that what is the chance that none of these things is going to happen to you or maybe your children in your lifetime or their lifetimes? And so it only makes sense to be medically prepared for issues that may occur as a result of either not being where help is immediately available or in the aftermath of a disaster where help is there but overwhelmed.
Now, I went last night and looked at one of your YouTube videos, and this one was on heat stress and heat strokes. And you have a little bit of fun during the video, too. And I like that. You know, you're not just making it all serious and heavy. There was a lot of fun going on there. But you did pass on some really useful information. And I think some of our listeners are interested because we've had severe heat occurrences in the last couple of years, like in Texas, where it just went to 35 and stayed there every day for over a month and didn't cool down much at night. We had an incident in France where an estimated 30,000 people died because of the heat, which they were not prepared for. So what were some of the things that you discussed in that video that would help people?
Well, I think the important thing is, first, you must get the person that has been exposed to the heat or maybe in heat stroke away from the heat source. It's very simple. Most of this stuff is very, very common sense. There are times when your environment is your friend, and there are times when your environment is your enemy. And if you have someone who is suffering from heat-related illness, get them out of the sun as soon as possible. These types of people, if they're wearing clothes, you should take their clothes off. You should apply moist, if you can't drench these people in cold and cool water, then you want to at least apply moist compresses in areas where blood vessels run close to the skin to effectively deliver cool temperatures to the body core. Those areas would be your neck, would be your groin area, and would be your armpit or axillary area. These are things that are important to do. You would fan somebody if you had electricity. You use a fan to help evaporate the heat. And also, if you don't have a fan, just fan the person with a piece of cardboard if that's all you have. The one thing that's very important, though, that is very important, is that you want to elevate the feet of the person about maybe 12 inches. So, in other words, put them in the shock position so that you can make sure there's good blood flow to the brain. And you want to avoid giving fluids to this person unless you're certain that they're alert, because otherwise, many times, fluids will go down the wrong tube. So instead of going down the esophagus, it may go down an airway. And if that happens, you might be in worse shape than you were than when you started.
So they may be mumbling, but if they're not coherent, you're not giving them water.
I'm not giving them fluid.
We'll be right back with Dr. Joe Alton and your health during the coming record heat waves. Stay tuned to Radio EcoShock.